This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Monday afternoon, April 29th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Efforts continue in Springfield to bring the CTA, Metra, and PACE into one umbrella agency. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the week ahead will include the latest reports on home prices and factory orders, plus the comprehensive government jobs report for April. Let's get a preview from Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And let's start off with the biggie, and that is Friday morning, the government jobs report for the month of April. And there are no indications of major job losses happening. It doesn't seem like, you know, the applications for first-time unemployment claims are still at record low levels. So I guess economists, what they're going to keep their eye on is growth.
That's right. I mean, we continue to see very strong job growth. We've had, you know, better than 300,000 in recent months. Unemployment rate has been below 4% for 26 straight months. That's the first time that's happened since the late 1960s. So we expect to see a bit slower job growth, maybe around 250,000 in April, but that would still be a good solid number and indicative of a historically strong labor market.
Now, let's break down some of the reports coming out this week, starting with tomorrow, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. And I would imagine it's going to show elevated prices once again because of that locked up housing market.
That's right. It's a very tight housing market out there. If you have a mortgage that's at 3 or 3.5%, you're not going to want to sell. Inventories are very tight, and that's driving up prices, even with high mortgage rates and low affordability in the housing market.
And then we have more reports on inflationary pressures in the economy, and that is the employment costs report also coming out tomorrow.
That's right. That's very important. The Fed watches that closely for indications of inflationary pressures coming from the labor market. That's a good measure. It tends to follow individual workers over time. And so it is indicative of what's going on with pay increases for workers who are already in the labor market. And, you know, the Fed will be looking there to see if wage growth is slowing as the labor market cools off some. They would like to see that because that should help bring inflation down in the U.S. economy.
We're setting up the week in data with Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. And then we talked about how the government jobs report for the month of April will be released on Friday. Wednesday, we always get the ADP report, the private payrolls report. And of course, different methodologies, and they come up with different numbers. And it used to be you could kind of track the ADP report and the government jobs report is a reliable preview of what was to come. But now it seems like the ADP figure is almost the exact opposite of what the government says the following Friday.
That's right. It hasn't had much predictive power. The government report is still the gold standard for this, although we have been seeing big revisions in the government jobs data lately. And so we're kind of de-emphasizing the ADP report and putting most of the focus on the Bureau of Labor Statistics report that comes out on Friday.
And then we have factory orders coming out on Thursday, which tells a number of different stories. It gives you an idea of interest rate sensitivity, you know, financing those big factory orders. And on top of that, it's also a good read on where we are as far as the supply chain is concerned.
That's right, and also business investment. And we have seen a pickup in manufacturing activity. We also get the ISM Manufacturing Index on Wednesday. That's moved back into expansionary territory. So I think that overall we're seeing a little bit of a pickup in manufacturing activity, as we've seen, although interest rates are up over the past few weeks, they're still down from where they were in the fall, and that is supporting manufacturing activity in the U.S.
Busy week in data. Thanks for breaking it down for us. Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Coming up, looking at the possibility of a single regional transit agency, combining the three individual transit agencies we have in the Chicago area right now.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Legislation introduced in Springfield would combine the CTA, PACE, and METRA into one regional agency. Let's discuss the possibility and the potential benefits and difficulties with Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And this would be more than just a regional transit agency that would take the place of the RTA and govern the CTA, METRA, and PACE. This would become a statewide overarching transit agency, and that seems awfully complicated.
That's right. This is going to be a big lift politically. And keep in mind that we have the Regional Transportation Authority, which has a board, and the three service boards under it, Metro, PACE, and CTA. And they all have sort of different political dynamics. So creating this Metropolitan Mobility Authority really is kind of a big political lift, but we're going to see what happens in Springfield.
And as far as the bill sponsors are concerned, they say that there's safety in numbers, and putting all of the state's transit agencies from Metra all the way down to Cairo would give the state a little more power when it comes to trying to figure out the next phase in funding when that fiscal cliffs arrive. When that fiscal cliff arrives, when the COVID money runs out before too long.
That's right. In 2025, the cliff starts, but 2026, it's really severe, and there's no solution at this point. It's service cuts are on the table. And what a lot of us are pushing for is more innovation to integrate our three service providers. If you ride Metro and CTA, for the most part, they have different ticketing systems. The stations don't connect well. So you have a lot of opportunities being left on the table by not having sort of a holistic, aggressive planning agenda for the three. So the kind of the grand trade-off is, we'll find more money for transit agencies, new taxes that could be a partial tax on services, it could be real estate, very politically tough things. But the prize is more funding in exchange for a new board structure, and we'll see how the legislator. Look at that.
The RTA was created 50 years ago, more or less to consolidate all of these suburban bus companies. If you remember Nortran, for example, which was or the Evanston Bus Company, and also for a number of suburbs that had banded together to essentially fund and save the commuter rail services that were serving their town. And that was the RTA pooling these individual services together to serve the entire region. If we go statewide, outside of just the political lift, operationally, how would this work? It would just be too unwieldy.
That is a risk. You look at our state, and not to throw punches here, but you see large governments sometimes become pretty inflexible and pretty status quo. And what we would want is an agency that's willing to push the boundaries. And I think everybody sees, though, that all these disconnected networks aren't necessarily working in unison. So you got other states like Maryland, which they have a statewide training agency, New Jersey, and they've been able to make it work pretty well. I think, though, none of those have cities as large and complex as Chicago and its suburbs. So, of course, very complicated to pull that together. But I think the prize of more funding could give those agencies a lot of incentive to play ball.
And very quickly, Joe, to turn this around, if you do have Metra under the umbrella of a statewide service agency, could that be used to increase the level of regional passenger rail coming into and out of Chicago, similar to the proposed line to Rockford?
It certainly could. And we could see new innovations there. Illinois is pretty much a leader in intercity rail transportation. Metro's essentially is the choice for the new Rockford service. So we do see the agencies are willing to try new things. I think the the big concern right now in our region is just how we can both manage this cliff and try new innovative things to get more people back on transit. And I think new funding has to be part of the mix, but we can see with all the pressure on the CTA right now, there's a lot of talk, you know, is our governance innovative enough? Are they imaginative enough? And this would try to move the ball.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, the return of dress codes at restaurants.
It's discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
More high-end restaurants are requiring customers to dress more nicely and skip the casual wear. Let's track the trend with Ali Marati, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Ali, thank you for joining us today. Now, this is kind of a surprise to me, Ali. I mean, pandemic or no pandemic, if you're going out to a nice meal at a nice place, you look the part. But apparently, I was the outlier. A lot of people are very comfortable with wearing hoodies and yoga pants to the fine dining establishment. And now the fine dining establishments are saying, nuh-uh.
You're exactly right. I think you were the outlier in that one, especially in a post-pandemic world. You know, people have gotten more comfortable to wearing comfy clothes, I guess. Athleisure is more trendy than it once was. And also a lot of people with the kind of permanent hybrid work schedule are going out to eat from home rather than coming from the office where they're already dressed in business attire.
And is this what kind of risks does this pose for the establishments themselves? I mean, obviously, you want to enforce this dress code, but at the same time, if Mr. and Mrs. Flip-Flops and Yoga Pants are a loyal customer, you don't want to turn them off.
Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, you have to think about the wording. You have to think about how you're presenting it to people. So a lot of these restaurants, they hit consumers with it. It's, you know, it's posted on the door. It's posted at the host stand. It's posted on their website. And you get notified of it when you make a reservation through OpenTable or whatever. So it's that. And there's a reputational risk, right? Like, you don't want to be seen as elitist or exclusionary in a world where being inclusive is very important to consumers nowadays. You don't want people to take to you know, the internet and leave a review for you, a Yelp review that's bad, something like that. So there's a lot of risk here. There's also a lot of training that has to go into telling your staff how to do this and implement it in a way that doesn't offend people, because nobody likes to be told what to wear.
And even if you do enforce the policy, even if 99 out of 100 customers understand what you're trying to do, you talk about the online component of this, all it takes is one viral video to undo all of that work.
That's exactly right. You know, I think a lot of restaurant operators are scared of that. And you know, when I was reporting the story out, I had a hard time getting some folks to talk to me on the record about it because they just didn't want to, you know, involve themselves in the conversation and put themselves more at risk of that happening.
It's also a sign kind of like the return to office trends and the renaissance in business travel that a lot of practices that took root in 2020 and then continued over the years are starting to wind down, and that maybe that world of 2019 is possible after all.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things when I started reporting this story out, I asked a couple experts, you know, is this really the true sign of pandemic recovery, right? Because for so long, restaurants, they were forced to shut down during the pandemic. And then when those restrictions lifted, they had a really hard time getting people to come back in. And even after vaccines came out, et cetera, it was still hard for them to recoup those losses from 2020 because restaurant margins are so thin. We were dealing with inflation, et cetera. Now, it in fact is a sign of recovery and of success, right? If these restaurants are able to be choosy in who comes and who doesn't.
So the bottom line, the second half of the decade of the 2020s will belong to pants with buttons and belts.
Exactly right.
Ali Marati, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, the latest on AI and concerns of election interference, plus a couple of suggestions from our Monday stock pick.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Picker. This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The funeral service is taking place for Chicago police officer Luis Huesca, shot as he headed home from work just over a week ago. Law enforcement steps in at some pro-Palestinian rallies on college campuses across the U.S. Artificial intelligence is taking the threat of election disinformation to a new level. And it's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get some ideas from a portfolio pro. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 118 points. The NASDAQ is up 79. S&P 500 up 18. 65 degrees right now in Chicago. Under cloudy skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. The life of Chicago police officer Luis Huesca is being remembered during his funeral at the St. Rita Chapel at 77th and Western on the southwest side. He was killed April 21st while returning to his home on the southwest side after completing a shift. Father Matthew Foley of St. Gall Catholic Church addressed Huesca's mother, Edith, at the funeral.
You not only lost your son, you lost the young man who chose to live with you. For 6 years, he moved into our neighborhood to not only to protect you, but to protect us.
Investigators are working to track down the suspect in the shooting, 22-year-old Xavier Tate Jr. of Aurora. Gaza-related protests continue on college campuses in this country. In spite of repeated efforts to shut them down, Palestinian supporters clashed with pro-Israel activists at UCLA yesterday. The details from CBS News correspondent Elise Preston.
As commencement day approaches for many colleges and universities,
the people
administrators at both public and private schools are scrambling to find ways forward. At Columbia University, where the country's first encampment still stands, commencement still hangs in the balance.
Demonstrators have been arrested at least 22 U.S. campuses. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Stocks kick off the week on a high note. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And what helped the markets start the week on a strong note?
I think it's a bit of a follow-through, Rob. We had a pretty solid week last week after a very weak performance 2 weeks ago. So I think there's more follow-through from last week. I certainly think that the inline inflation data, the personal consumption expenditure number, on Friday helped change the attitude about where the Fed might be heading with rates, and certainly shifted our focus back to earnings, which in large part have been much better than expected. It looks as though the S&P 500 is going to have about 75% of its constituents beat their earnings estimates, and they're going to beat those with mid-single-digit earnings growth. And that's a bit ahead of what consensus had seen coming into the quarter.
And we have been talking an awful lot about big tech and big companies, the so-called Magnificent Seven that have been powering the markets for the past year or so. But there is one company that is known for one thing that could be considered a tech company, and we're talking about Domino's Pizza. Their stock up 4% today, earnings topping analyst expectations, but tech really is the story at Domino's.
It certainly is. They were one of the most innovative restaurant chains to actually roll out better technology to improve their throughput. And if you look at a long-term chart, Rob, of Domino's Pizza, it's been an absolute tremendous investment over the last decade. But their leadership there is spending a lot of money and making sure they have the appropriate technology to make sure you get that pizza on time.
And then Tesla jumping 15% today because they cleared a hurdle for self-driving technology in China. But therein lies the rub, Art, it sounds like, for a company like Tesla, where they're promising a lower cost vehicle. And in the worldwide market, there are a number of entities, especially in China, that are more than willing to undercut Tesla when it comes to that low cost EV.
Yeah, clearly the dominant leader in domestic EV sales, and has been for a while, feels as though they've saturated that early adopter market in EVs. So the next thing they need to do is find that next layer of buyers. To do that, they have to offer a lower priced car. And certainly the Chinese competition is heating up, but they're not selling cars in the United States yet. So Tesla still has a chance to break into that low-cost EV market, but they won't be alone, and the profit margins won't be as good. I think investors just looked at a stock that was so beat up over the course of the last 18 months in terms of market action and said any news is great news for a stock that just has been absolutely demolished over the course of the last month or so.
Some of the biggies reporting this week, Apple, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and Amazon, and all four of them, but especially Coca-Cola and McDonald's, seem to be good bellwethers of where the consumer is, where their head's at these days.
Yeah, we just got retail sales, the government report on retail sales last Monday, and that was certainly stronger than had been anticipated. In last month's retail sales number was also edged higher. So I think the consumer's in pretty darn good shape. We're creating about 263,000 jobs every month. So I certainly think that bodes well for consumption in an economy that's largely driven by consumption. So I think that you're going to have some pretty strong reports in both Coca-Cola and McDonald's. And I certainly think Apple is pricing in some bad news that likely won't be delivered when they report earnings later this week.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, tracking concern over AI and the presidential campaign and the election. It's
information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Experts are warning that the misuse of artificial intelligence and the proliferation of deep fakes will likely be worse in the 2024 campaign and election. Joining us to discuss the threat of election interference is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And this is such a complicated topic because it seems like there are a number of players responsible for falling for deepfake scams. I mean, obviously, there are guardrails on the tech industry, but the onus is also on us as the consumer to spot the deepfakes. And that is not is considerably easier said than done.
That's exactly right. I mean, any of us who are old enough to remember sort of the Godzilla versus the Smog Monster type videos found it sort of hilarious way back when those movies, which were made in Japan, were dubbed, and inevitably the mouth would move and the English language that would come out of the speakers didn't match up, and it was kind of laughably bad. It was fun to watch, but it was laughably bad. What's not so laughable at this point is what you're actually pointing to right now. Namely, it is almost impossible, pretty much as of today, and by the way, it is day-to-day, hour-to-hour, but it is almost impossible to discern the difference between something that was created by a deepfake algorithm and something that is real. And obviously with an election cycle coming up and everybody, you know, basing their voting decisions on behavior of their of their favorite or least favorite politician and so forth, and stated things and other sort of proof that the politician deserves a vote. Well, guess what? If you're looking for proof, you are depending on a plausible way to decide if what they were saying was really said. Now it's almost impossible. So that's what's so scary about the current environment.
And it seems like there are regulations in place, or at the very least agreements in place among the tech companies, to really put guardrails up regarding AI-generated election content or so-called deepfakes or AI image manipulation. But it seems like the real issue here is it's not the companies themselves or governments, but it's just one person working on their own who may not be necessarily ideologically inclined, but they will put out all of this content simply because they like the attention. And there are thousands, if not millions, of people willing to lap it up.
Well, that's right. In fact, that attention is, to your point, is very easy to grab because these engines, and there are literally hundreds of them, a few of them are sort of leading the way. And I almost hesitate to mention them because I don't want to drive people to do more of it. But the point is that there are hundreds of algorithms that are right now ready to help you get your voice heard, even though it's a fake voice. And by the way, just so folks who are listening can understand, a deep fake has basically two things that happen. And those two things are, you have to lip sync, of course, but you have to basically sync things up. And the engines, there's a generator and a discriminator. The generator creates the fake content, and the discriminator then decides, using an algorithm, whether or not that the lip syncing is good enough. And these algorithms are getting great at generating and discriminating. It used to be generating was easy, but it looked terrible. Discriminators, the sort of subset of these algorithms, actually makes the image look really plausible. So that is what's really challenging. It's happening so fast. Any person, to your point, can go online right now and generate a deepfake. I looked at deepfakes of Prime Minister Trudeau from Canada, of Ron DeSantis from Florida, and so and it's almost impossible. Of Morgan Freeman, who's a very popular deepfake person now because his voice is so great, it's really hard to tell the difference.
And even then, you don't even have to worry about the technology itself being used to create confusion. You could also just say, like, oh, that wasn't me, that was AI, when you're trying to deflect from controversy.
Look, anybody who's fond of saying or hearing the phrase, that's fake news, now has something, they have plausible deniability for the first time. All I can tell you is, from my perspective, observer, close observer, admittedly, but of the technology industry, this is a major problem. And the major problem is not that people can make stuff up. They've been making stuff up since people have, been delivering news by tablet, okay? So that's not the difference. The difference is the speed and the freedom that you have to do it from your laptop anywhere. And so what you're going to be watching is really, you're going to have to look at it with a really, really critical eye. So we'll see what happens, but right now it's a terribly difficult time for anybody who's depending on the news to deliver real news.
Paul Hochman, thanks for joining us today. Join us this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And both of your selections come from the world of ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And for those of us who are uninitiated, what is an ETF?
Well, good afternoon, Rob, and thanks for having me on. So an ETF is something that allows investors to buy securities that are normally not listed on their own on exchanges. So that could include commodities like gold. It could also include baskets of stocks in a certain sector. You could buy the whole basket. There's an ETF called QQQ that allows you to basically buy the entire NASDAQ sector of the market. So it's a way for investors to get exposure to areas that they normally wouldn't be able to.
And both of your ETFs are, well, one is at the very kind of in the currency arena, starting off with the most precious metal of them all.
Yeah, GLD. So I like gold here. I was on your show a year ago, almost to the day, advocating gold. Since then, it's run up 20%. I still like it here. If you want a diversified, balanced portfolio, gold, and I would include Bitcoin maybe in here too, but especially gold should be a part of that portfolio, 10 to 20%, especially now with a contentious political election coming, huge geopolitical risks. There's inflationary pressures and also a stock market that's near all-time highs and at a risk of certainly at a risk of correction. So this is a great time to own gold. Again, I had advocated it a year ago. I still like it here. It's not a short-term trade. It's not something you buy and you try to make money in 2 weeks. It's something you buy, you stash it away in your portfolio. You look back in a year or two, and maybe you change the size a bit, but you just hold it long-term. It's a great hedge, and especially now.
And the next one is if you don't want to get down and dirty in the bond market, your next selection gives you some exposure to it.
Yeah, so it's TLT, and that's basically it's an ETF that invests in long-term treasuries. It basically tries to get you about a 20-year term on the treasuries, and it's an unloved asset class. U.S. Treasuries right now, it's been going down for 4 years now as inflation has stayed high. But I just like it as a contrarian bet. It is a hugely popular hedge against stock market corrections. We certainly have some recessionary risks here with the way interest rates are and it putting pressure on things like the housing market and the consumer. There's a lot of data that has come out that says the consumer's not exactly strong right here. So it's just a great hedge, just like GLD is a good hedge. It's a hedge to your portfolio. Again, you buy it long term. You're not looking to scalp it. You buy it long term, stash in your portfolio, and look back in a few years. And if we do have a correction in the stock market, you're going to be super happy you have TLT. You're not going to be excited about it in a boring bull market like we're in right now, but that's not likely to remain. So you want to have it as a hedge. It's just a great thing to have just to in case there is some issues with a recession coming forward. So I just like it. It's a great contrarian bet right here.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, thank you for joining us on this Stock Picker Monday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.